What's up, guys? This is Zach, and you have just stepped into the dark blue. Today, I am joined by a very hot slice of New York-style pizza. He's a buddy of mine. We've been working together for a little while. His name is Laith Suriel, and he's going to be my co-host today. Welcome, Laith.
Hi.
How's it going, man?
Hi, I'm the hot slice. Very cute.
So yeah, guys, today we are talking about the daily grind. We're talking about work. We all got to do it. We all hate it, or most of us anyway. And so we're just gonna clear the air about how shitty work can be. So to do that, we've got this lovely porter here, this Black Boss porter, and it's a product of Poland. Very nice. And porters, if you guys don't know, actually became popular in London back in the day, years ago, with porters, people who used to carry things across rivers for people, for other people. So basically couriers, deliverers, you know, delivery people. And so, yeah, it seems pretty appropriate for the conversation today. And we'll get into that a little bit more later. But for now, thank you so much for joining me, Laith.
Absolutely.
Cheers.
Pleasure being here. The catalyst to greatness. If it's okay, I'm going to pound this.
Go for it.
Because yeah, that'll make me a better me.
Burn it.
For the next hour.
Hair of the dog. Laith had a pretty crazy day yesterday at the zoo. Just got lit at the zoo.
Yeah, which I don't patronize often. My understanding was that this was predominantly an aquarium, and we were taken for a ride once we got there. The edible ensued. We put down a pack of Saints pre-rolls and then headed to McMiniman's.
Which, yeah.
McMiniman's, that's the one. The porter's already working.
Indeed. Yeah, McMiniman's is a very popular place up here, guys, in Seattle, the Pacific Northwest anyway. So it's a historic brewery and hotel.
Yeah.
It's a pretty great place. If you guys haven't been out there, go check it out. But yeah, so I have the pleasure of having Laith here this morning, afternoon, with the hangover and everything. It's great.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit? Actually, you know what? Let's talk about this beer first. This is great.
It's like this is. I haven't had breakfast. It's like choking on a silky scarf. You know, it's just like it's like, you know, when you wake up and you need water. Like, you need water the second you wake up, especially in like an anti-humid. I've been telling you about my heaters at home. So they're on all day because my girlfriend somehow operates on a sub-zero. Internal
just
body temperature.
Blooded.
So the thermostats all around the house are set to 80. The air is super dry. I wake up in a panic with like cracked lips, bleeding, and so I never get my. I'm just like so dehydrated in the morning. This is my first drink of the day, and I gotta say, this is both a solid breakfast and you know, pre-hydrative.
Yeah, it's like just makes your mouth feel like carpet.
Yeah it's very full, very full body though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got a great flavor though. I really like this porter. It's only like $4.50 for the pint. Oh yeah, one full pint, you know. Yeah. So pretty decent.
Yeah,
anyway, you guys can get it at your local, you know,
at your bodega, at your local bodega.
Oh right, yeah, this New York guy,
yeah,
and his bodegas. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Laith?
So your boy's from a little town called Sunset Park in the great borough of Brooklyn, New York. Born and raised. A lot going on there, but I finally, after about 2 decades of plotting my great escape. As you may know, it's quite difficult to, when you live in a big metropolitan area, it's quite expensive. And so we're living paycheck to paycheck in the way of the daily grind. it's very hard to leave a place when you can't afford to leave the place.
It's so, true. Like you're just like locked into these expensive leases.
Yeah. And it's just the insanity of, you know, from a very early age. So I left home at about 14, went to this specialized high school in Boston, spent 2.5 years there, came back home because I ran out of funding from a grant perspective. I was awarded quite a bit of money to stay in school. And then part of that deal was that I would have to supplement my income via my family or what have you. So that didn't work out. And I came back to New York and, egregiously decided that I was going to do everything I could to just leave what became of my hometown. So as many people know, Brooklyn was kind of like the ember that started the drastic change across the country in most metropolitan areas.
The gentrification catalyst,
Williamsburg, all that good stuff, the hipster mecca. And it changed my home quite a bit, probably for the better from a economic standpoint, but for the hometown folks, and I'm sure everyone experiences this, I've had my fair share of encounters with Seattleites that are just like, you know, you guys just come in and destroy our home. And I remember being at, so I was at a bar in West Seattle, and I walked in and this girl happened upon my group of friends. We got to the point where she's, she claims to be from Seattle. She's Cambodian, implant. She did have implants. We're going around the horn and saying where we're from. And of course, everybody else is a local and I'm from Brooklyn. I go, I'm from Brooklyn. She goes, all you folks coming from all over the country and you're calling this place and you're jacking up our rent and you're taking all our jobs. And I'm going, lady, this happened to me first as a child. I don't think you understand what you're doing here.
Yeah. It's like, you don't even know where it begins.
Yeah. It's interesting to be on the other side of the spectrum in that capacity. And it's, I left home, in pursuit of a better life and I landed in Seattle about a year and change ago.
Nice.
Courtesy of our wonderful, employer. And, I honestly can't say that I want to look back. I've taken a couple trips back home just for holidays and birthdays and things of that nature, but life hasn't changed positively. And so I'm kind of happy that I stepped out of my comfort zone and came out here.
Yeah, that's great. It's kind of similar for me as well. You know, I've definitely outgrown my city, my hometown, you know, which at one point I called my city, you know, mm-hmm. and I was
proud.
Yeah. I was,
yep.
You know, I'm from San Antonio, Texas, so yeah. I grew up in San Antonio, Texas.
Very cool place.
Yeah, it's a great city. But going back now, you know, I can see some huge differences in it and some huge similarities that make me not want to go back, you know? And so I think it's that aspect of like stagnation and, you know, that sort of thing.
It's become very impersonal. As much as like a lot of the historic buildings are there and a lot of your community is still there, the people that have outlived the changes or still impacted by the changes are still very much in the same place they were 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And all the new folks that are there now, I think take on a new, they kind of pivot in their own personal paradigm to try to match the energy that they think New York portrays. And it's an inauthentic caricature of the people that are from back home. And so all those nuances where everyone goes, New Yorkers are assholes. New Yorkers are, fast paced and this and that, and, really hard to get along with, or just kind of, things that were portrayed in like old media movies and things of that nature.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of the folks, from back home, a lot of my family have always been super welcoming, wonderful people. You know, there's the cadence of, I think, you know, when I get frustrated or inebriated, There's an aggressive cadence there, but it's all in good fun and very much so defensive rather than offensive.
Right, right.
And it's just a fun outlet.
I'm hoping we can get you to that point a little bit in this podcast at least. So.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. So that's just a little bit about, you know, where I'm from and
where it all started,
where it all began,
the beginnings of the lathe.
Yeah.
I was just telling Lath, I changed his name in my phone to the Mushroom King, because he's got quite the green thumb and, he's been growing some mushrooms in his home for salads and such, you know, that kind of mushroom, the legal mushrooms, you know? So he's been growing some of those in his home and, they pop up very quickly. It's pretty impressive. So, so stomping grounds.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's weird looking back on those stomping grounds and where we come from and, sure. And what got us where we are today, you know, and one of those things for me is work. I mean, I've been working since I was 16 years old.
Yep. Just about the same.
Yep. I started as early as I could because in my mind, I wanted to be independent as soon as I possibly could.
Right.
You know, I wanted to make my own money. I wanted to, you know, just, sure. I don't know, show people that I could do it. Yeah. I don't know, or show myself that I could do it. I'm not sure which, maybe both.
Yeah.
But
for me, for me, it was more a testament to how much I hated my life at home.
Yeah.
That is the single driver as to why I left home so early, why I started working so early to try to achieve independence as quickly as possible. It was because my home life was so imbalanced. I mean, I had my family was separated as most families are, I'm sure, in this age. But particularly back in the day, you know, my dad is a Dominican immigrant, first generation American. My mother is a third generation Puerto Rican. Our families were, you know, divested in their own personal interests, i.e. my dad's side came here, obviously, the old model, came here for a better life, started off as a restaurateur, slowly buying property and investing in his community in Brooklyn. And then on my mom's side, so I lived with my mom and my grandma, who had a salon and laundromat in our neighborhood just around the corner, which was a pretty cute time. we had a beautiful brownstone. We came from pretty humble beginnings, little apartment, gold foil ceilings, all that good stuff. All three of us slept in the same bed for a number of years, to owning a couple of small businesses on Fifth Avenue in Brooklyn. Which was a pretty big feat and accomplishment for our family to, you know, getting our own brownstone, which is like the modern day dream is to just own a brownstone. It's very romantic. That whole thing is buying the brownstone in Brooklyn and being super neighborly and having your coffee shop on the corner and living a life of subtle luxury in a very busy place. To just losing it all.
The East Coast American dream.
Awesome. my driver was this plan, this initial plan my family all had together from a common goal, very, very quickly actually started to divulge into our families are kind of deprecating and falling apart. And so that leads to everyone working, grinding, three different jobs, working 7 days a week, not having any time with my parents, not having the ability to go out and do what I wanted or have fun at all, kind of drove me to a place of, you need to get your money because that's going to be,
that's where the freedom is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So,
all right. Well, yeah, man, I definitely want to hear more about that in just a minute here. And we'll get into it. Guys, we're going to go way, way back and talk about our first jobs. So, yeah, it sounds like you're looking forward to that.
Yeah.
All right. So I don't know about you, but I grew up with a really great example of hard work. My dad, he was from a young age, he wanted to, I think, kind of get out of his hometown. You know, he grew up in a really small community in Ohio and, or Pennsylvania, I apologize, like right on the border there, you know? Yeah. And so it's kind of hard to differentiate.
The Midwest is all the same.
Right. Yeah. So, but yeah, like, you know, I think he wanted an out. And, so my dad joined the Air Force, at a pretty young age. And, you know, I watched him work so hard, you know, and I didn't always know a lot about what he did, but I knew what he did. You know, I knew he worked on airplanes. I knew he taught people how to work on airplanes, which was always pretty cool to me, you know. And, you know, my mom was always working too. She was always working at, typically working at a bank, you know, as a bank teller and that sort of thing. And she always seemed to enjoy it too, you know, which is kind of cool. And my parents always kind of gave me that example. They gave me the example of, you know, you work hard to get what you need, to get what you want. And on top of that, my dad also always told me, basically, I joined the military so you don't have to, right? Yeah. So you can have better options.
Yeah.
Right. So the military got him out of a very small town where it's all factory work and it's all, you know, very
sure
difficult, you know, just hard labor, you know? Yeah. And so now he put our family in a place where he created a lot of opportunities.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think our parents did a good job of creating the baseline, or I think as a generation, our parents created a solid baseline for us to have the ability to choose career paths and learning paths, without, that level of instability that we had in the 80s and 90s where, you know, you had mortgage crisis, you had a very difficult time of pivoting from one generation to another where people were inheriting their homes. There were coming out of these legacy companies in the military with golden parachutes and things of that nature.
Right.
And we're exiting that general culture and then coming into a space where everyone needs to be independent. We're no longer in nuclear households. Everything's deprecating. The divorce rate is through the roof and this and that, all because of like our financial structure coming to a crumble. So, in similar straits, you know, my ethic comes from, so my dad at a very young age, at the age of 18, started driving trucks. And that was, you know, 8% of American GDP is all in transportation.
Yeah.
He saw it as an outlet, as a very easy outlet initially to just be liberated from having to be home all the time. If you don't know, back in the 80s and 90s, and I'm sure for way longer, truck drivers just hit the open road. From the East Coast, you went from New Jersey, Newark, Fraling, Houston, Avenue.
I have no idea what you're saying now.
it's all like, it was just, so there's a central,
what are these words?
Yeah, no, they're, so Newark, New Jersey was kind of like the transportation hub of the East, of the entire East Coast, for a long time. And still, hubs, like some of the larger, food companies and beer companies and stuff on the East Side. So, he started driving from Newark, New Jersey out to, you know, all types of Georgia for dry vans, which is like your produce and your newspapers and things of that nature. And then driving out west to deliver beer I forget what they call them, but some type of refrigerated unit
for delivering the beer.
Yeah. For delivering the beer to the West Coast. It's probably one of the first pioneers, but, he started off in transportation and he has a very kind of illustrious dynamic story, which I think I can talk about now because it's so far removed from the time. But he I don't know if I can talk about this.
You don't know if you're allowed to.
I don't know if I'm.
I don't mind. You can talk about whatever you want.
I think in this capacity, I don't think this will go farther than your community here, but. There's a story he told at a time. So there's two parts of the story where my grandfather owned a bodega in Brooklyn, on 14th Street, and 2nd Ave, where, my cousins, or my uncle, it's unclear, they would sell Coke out of the bodega, right?
Oh,
it was
nice.
The front. It was
nice.
A front. So my grandfather didn't know. He would be outside playing dominoes on the corner with his buddies. And my brother, my uncle, my cousin all worked, or my dad's cousin all worked in the bodega together. And at that point, my dad had been separated from my mom. My mom would drive up to the corner. She wanted no part in having a conversation with him after their separation when I was a kid. My parents had me at 18. And so that was a difficult kind of rocky start. But my first memories were walking into the bodega with my Power Rangers backpack. My cousin would sit me up on the countertop. And then my dad would stuff about what I now know to be anywhere from $500 to $1,000 in my backpack every single weekend.
Oh my God.
On Saturday mornings as child support, because my family was not litigious and didn't want to go to court and deal with the whole child support issue. So there was that. And so awesome. I remember here's the connectors. So they used the bodega as a front to sell Coke. And I guess there was a DT that busted them one time, and my uncle took the plane because he didn't have citizenship at the time.
Gotcha.
And gotcha. So as a reward for taking 100% of the fault for that, he got deported. He can never return to the U.S.
Wow.
For the remainder of his life. And but my dad in turn would supplement his income to just ensure that he would stay alive and have just something to fall back on if he really needed it when he went back.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So guys, I know these stories sound like movies, but this stuff actually happens. Yeah. So those of you who are listening and didn't think that this is life.
Yeah.
This is life.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's the nuances of my family's becomings. It's the thing is, Brooklyn, New York is pre-Giuliani was a cesspool for like drug trafficking, sex trafficking.
Yep.
Like it was.
If you haven't seen The Get Down, get on Netflix and watch The Get Down.
Yeah.
It'll give you a brief history.
Yeah, it's not
of
as
New York,
but it is certainly as dangerous.
Yeah. So that said. I mean, these jobs are crazy. The things that our parents do, the lengths that our parents have gone to for us to get where we're at.
Yeah.
Right. It's awesome. And I appreciate that so much. Like I think daily I have thoughts and just kind of connect to the understanding that like my dad and my mom did a lot for me to be able to live here in Seattle, to get to a point where I can live here in Seattle in this two bedroom apartment in Seattle.
Right.
You know, and it's difficult. I have days where I struggle, you know, but like, it's a pretty nice spot, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And so, you know, his efforts and my dad's efforts, my mom's efforts gave me the opportunity to go to college,
mm-hmm.
gave me the opportunity to like have some time to figure out what I want to do and where I want to go with my life. Right. So I've had some jobs, you know? And so that's, I want to know, what was your first job? What got you going in the work industry?
Yeah. So in my frayed relationship, with my family, in my attempts to become independent, I tried to, for years and years and years, with hundreds of failures, tried to work anywhere in any capacity. I just wasn't getting any jobs earlier on in my life. So I would bounce back and forth between having my own place, one bedroom in a 6 or 7 bedroom apartment, scrounging for money, doing a lot of odd jobs, to trying to get literally anywhere. My education is kind of spotty. I've done a semester or two at 6 universities, from New England to New York. And that structure of learning just isn't for me. It doesn't hold my attention. It's very expensive. So my first job officially was working for my dad in a restaurant that he owned in Long Island.
Awesome.
What
were you doing? Were you washing dishes or were you like...
So he immediately... So my introduction to the restaurant or to the industry was, you know, we built it from it was a little water. It was a little restaurant on a channel where boats could pull up and stuff like that. So it was initially a just kind of like a port for some boats in the neighborhood. And so we had to start from scratch. So I helped them kind of develop as a 16-year-old.
That's what I was going to say. How old were you?
Yeah, I was about 16. And so we started this project in the winter. I lived with him. And in between school, coming home, I would help him go to Restaurant Depot, get all the stuffs that we needed for the restaurant for the night, offload, come into the restaurant, set the entire thing, and then work as a server initially as a busboy. So I was bussing tables at this like luxury, you know, American fine dining situation, very quickly. I was told to not, obviously not tell the other employees my age. So everyone thought I was 18. So I had to grow like a little, patchy beard and mustache,
as a 16-year-old does.
As a 16-year-old does. I started shaving every day frantically so that, because I was told in lore,
the more you shave,
the more you'll grow. So you'll have like so I started to develop like this 5 o'clock shadow by the time I was like, turning 18. And so I was able to present myself as an older human, but yeah, I was a busboy, and then I was a server up until I spilled 16 bottles of or glasses of Prosecco down the like CFO of like Kenmore Air's back at this fucking restaurant.
Oh my God.
And destroyed her like Givenchy blazer from the 80s. It was an entire ordeal.
It sounds like it. Yeah. See you guys, real life. This stuff happens. So I was, for my first job, I was actually, I worked at a theme park. Yeah. I worked at a Six Flags theme park for my first job. And, you know, it was an interesting time in my life, because, you know, it was the summertime, and it was basically just to kind of like make a few extra bucks, make some gas money. You know, I had just gotten my driver's license.
Yeah.
I was driving an 88 Honda Accord, and, you know, it was white and it had the pop-up headlights, you know.
To the coupe or?
No, the sedan.
The sedan. The
four-door, yeah. So it had the pop-up headlights, and like, so I put the Optimus Prime stickers on it because it was like a transformer, you know.
That's sick.
but yeah, so, you know, I would drive my 88 Honda Accord back and forth to the Six Flags theme park in San Antonio, and I worked in like
concessions. Please tell me
retail.
The food.
Retail, actually. Yep, I worked in retail. Yep. Thankfully, I promised myself when I was very young that I would never work in food service.
Okay.
In terms of like fast food, you know? Like, and concessions at a theme park. Goes in with fast food. Yeah. Right? So no, I worked in the retail. Some of the retail shops. I was lucky enough that one of those retail shops was in the water park. So my 16-year-old self was getting to see all the girls walking around in their swimsuits, which was, you know, nothing wrong with
a
that,
happy
right?
coincidence.
Yeah. And then another one was a candy shop, which also wasn't a terrible thing. Mm. So I would go home every day with like bags of candy and stuff, you know. But yeah, so that was a good time. I mean, it was, I had to wear these terrible khaki pants and polo shirt that didn't fit. You know, it was terrible. But and I had to shave, whereas you had to look older and try to grow a beard. I had to shave. I wasn't allowed to have stubble, even.
It's weird,
right?
I always aspired to have this like simple, normal, and on the and all the entropy in my life, all I wanted was some simple, regular, degular job as a kid.
Yeah,
if
like
I could
some,
just get
suburban,
there,
some suburban, like normal shit.
Yeah, because that was the pinnacle of what was that. That's the standard. Is like you get this manicured job, and that's what's going to support your family. Well, that, at the time, that was my idea of like of my steps to becoming successful was get the thing with the uniform because that's what's going to.
That's
pay
where
more.
The money is.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so that was my first job, and I transitioned from there to a grocery store where I was bagging groceries and pushing shopping carts, yeah. You know. And so I've always done the work, you know. I've done the manual labor and things sure. of that sort as well. And so and there's a history, there's a long history there. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about 20 years right now
yeah.
of history, of work history. And so, dude, it's crazy. You know, you know what changed my life? What changed my perspective on work? American Beauty. So I was 18 years old and I saw American Beauty for the first time.
Which is a nightmare. Dude, Kevin Spacey's face is so daunting.
I know. That movie, it's like, but I got so much out of that movie though, you know? And like for me and my 18-year-old clay mind, I was like, you know, there is more to life than this bullshit, repetitive,
sure.
like,
yeah,
you know, like, it's hard to describe off the cuff, but that movie made me realize that I wanted more.
Yeah. Yeah. In nature, just monotone. I thought what's interesting is I'm coming into a space where my perspective of more was luxury. And my perspective of more now is like adventure. It's in the just in your likes and tastes. And so my tastes, my individual tastes have pivoted to, you know, I joke with my girlfriend, Jenny. I joke with her about getting the Cybertruck, which is like a really funny thing. It's like a, you know, it's just like it's a triangle with wheels. It's really funny.
Yeah. Oh, and I don't know if you guys have seen this Tesla Cybertruck yet, but Elon, if you're listening, we are looking for sponsorships. So feel free to send us a Cybertruck or even just one of the cars. You know, we can settle with a Tesla, just a normal Tesla.
Yeah. just a Model S performance would be great. But, you know, there's very few things now, like, we go out, we're afforded the luxury of going out and just getting whatever we want or doing whatever we want, which is pretty nice. But for me, things have to evoke an emotion in me in order for me to have to instill value in them.
I don't know if you caught this, but Laith said something very powerful, at least to me. And he said, things must evoke emotion to create value or instill value. That is such a poignant statement for me. You know, I've worked some shitty jobs. I've worked some decent jobs. I've worked with some people that I really don't like. I've worked with some people that I'm still in contact with today, you know. There's always a little bit of give and take on all of that. But all of my experiences and everything that I've been through in my life, the things that have created value in my life, there's always strong emotions tied to them. And there's so much truth to that. So it's kind of discerning, like, what are the things that create those emotions for us? And how do we turn that into a future? You know, and that's the path that I'm on right now personally, they're creating that future from the things that have evoked emotion in me. Right. So anyway, that said, where I'm at right now has been a really interesting journey for me because, you know, I started off as a career, I started off in nonprofit work, right? I was working with teenagers for 8 years. And then I worked with the YMCA for 2 years, 2.5 years. As a marketing lead, that sort of thing, and in the membership department, that sort of thing. And so I needed a change from the nonprofit world because I was sorely disappointed in it, and the emotions that the nonprofit world evoked in me were disappointment and a little bit of sadness and anger, because there were a lot of things that the 501c3 world said that they were going to do and did not do as often as they claimed to.
Yeah.
Right. So I made a change. me and my ex-wife, we were living in Fort Worth, Texas. We weren't doing very well financially. Mm-hmm. We were really struggling. We were both working two part-time jobs, if not more, at certain points, doing things we really didn't want to do. And so it was always a little bit of a struggle, and it was putting a strain on our relationship. And so she said, hey, I'm going to apply for a new job. And so that's what she did. And it looked good. It looked like a great opportunity. So I went with her. I followed her. And we both applied for the same job, a large online retailer who has actually done a lot of great things for us, I think for both of us. Some for myself specifically, you know, it got me out here to Seattle. And it got me to a place financially I've never been before. I've been able to travel. I took my first international trip about 4 years ago to Scotland, and I've been addicted since then. And I've had the opportunity because of this employer to be able to see the world, you know, and it's amazing. It's great. And I've met some great people. I've met some terrible people, but I've met some great people as well, including you, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've been really grateful to work with you over the last year.
Sure.
And your perspective on the business and the things that you try to do mm-hmm. in your daily daily cadence of work yeah. and focusing on the people more so than the bullshit like numbers and this and that.
Right.
And so, anyway, pretty great stuff. I mean, the journey is.
It started, you know, this group or this org that we work for really started in the way of innovation that was exciting to me and from a seedling, you know, given the opportunity to start a business from the ground up is always, it's exciting. You know, we essentially work for a startup.
Even though we're working for, you know, for an umbrella corporation. Essentially,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But we were given the opportunity or in my experiences a couple of years ago, I was given the opportunity to start the groundwork that became the monster that is what we do now. Yeah. But I've always believed in, you know, protecting the people and creating this level of engagement that was, that then gave off the cadence of, a family environment, a culture, you know, joy in the things that you do. And similarly to your origins, my initial, pathway was always to go into nonprofit, but where I came from was that I would create a product that would then offer an incentive for you to essentially subsidize some nonprofit. So in the early stages of me operating independently, I would design like t-shirts and stuff like that and hoodies, and I would be able to scrounge together enough money for like a, you know, a 25 piece run and then sell that. Nice. And I would say, you know, one day this pot will become big enough that I'll be able to give to some massive, you know, org that's doing change in the way of, you know, childhood cancer, or for say it was like my first initiative or some other big thing. And so that came from a place of like learning, you know, I had an interest in luxury retail and collecting and things like that. One of my first jobs outside of having, you know, my dad's shitty restaurant job was that I would flip sneakers, you know, in New York, it was a big thing. I was coming up at a time where collectibles in the way of fashion was, a really big deal. So we would go to the Supreme store and buy, you know, however many hoodies you could for, the amount of money that you had in your pocket, and you flip it on the street for a couple hundred bucks. And so on and so forth. But my goal in the background was to say, all right, like 10% of this organization or 10% of what I'm doing needs to go to a noble cause, or needs to be going towards something that's going to continue to help, families stay together or something in that space.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's really cool. You know, it's not something that I say enough, but I think it's really cool that you afford a venue for people to, specifically men, in the way of helping instill that we all have feelings. We all have initiatives that are not the alpha, or we're not blindsided to the general nuances and problems that our society has today. That there are some of us, a lot of us really, that are trying to do something that is atypical, that's good, that it's very beneficial for
society.
Yeah, for society. Yeah, we're grooming. Yeah. You know, really, you're just grooming. Is this could grow into a thing that penetrates people that didn't know that there was a pivot or a paradigm that is good and generous to a larger group or a larger audience.
Nice. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's cool. I mean, that's our goal, you know? That's where we're trying to go, is just to really have a positive impact on men's mental health and understanding who they are, why they are, all that sort of thing. I've had a lot of things that have gotten me to this point to where, you know, this is a passion for me, you know, and we live in a generation where we're able to do this, you know, we're able to save up some money and then like go off and try to do our own thing and see how it goes. Right. Yeah. But not without some struggle.
Right.
Right. Like I've been poor.
Yeah.
You know, I've gone to Costco for samples for food, you know, like when I was working at Costco, there were days when I would buy $1.50 hot dog for lunch and I would go to the sample ladies and try to get as much food as I could throughout the day from the samples, you know, so I could pay my bills.
Yeah.
I've been in those places. And, you know, even now, working where we're working, I have struggles as well, you know? And I know you do too. You know, we have these conversations all the time and how, the workload impacts our family life and, how the workload impacts our mental state and like our, just the stress and frustration of certain things that we, that are imposed on us that we don't expect or whatever the case is,
right.
You know? So, how would you say that those kind of struggles, impact your goals, you know?
Well, it was very easy, at a time to just be a yes man, in our organization. And I think that's what's gotten me to, my point here, or my position, is that I was flexible. I was bored with my life up until this point, being hired on. And once I understood that there was an opportunity, in the way of opportunity, there's a level of invention and innovation that you can take on. And that was particularly exciting to me, was that I could just do whatever I wanted that I thought added value to our product, and grew it. So in the beginning, I hit the ground running as soon as I came into this space, and I was afforded the opportunity of travel, you know, creating the standard work for a lot of peoples that now exist in thousands of positions all across the East Coast. And maybe here, I don't know. My name's on a lot of things, so much so that I can't focus on every individual project that I've, I've executed. But
of course.
It made me feel really good that because I was one of the few that would just say yes, and I didn't have anything tethering me to, i.e. like a family or a pet or, you know, whatever the case was, to my life at home. And I wanted a plan for escape. This happened to align with my plans of travel and new experiences and getting out of my comfort zone, because I had struggled with a lot of introversion and lack of social awareness as a child, because I just didn't have friends and I didn't have the time to make friends. I moved around so much back home that this was my in. This was my career path was also executing on my personal wants, essentially.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's for great. Sure.
And it's, you know, it's been good. It's been very good. But at a certain point, just leading back to the whole idea of you got to do what you want.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people break a threshold when you are in a financially unfortunate situation. You go, I'm going to do whatever it takes.
You're right.
Then whenever you get to the point where you've succeeded at doing whatever it takes to get to a comfortable level, then you start to fuck off because now you have
that was your goal.
Yeah, that was your goal. You have the money that you want in your bank account. You're financially stable, and therefore that affords you the opportunity to have these experiences that you want to have or the things that you want to have. And I think, you know, in the same measure of like celebrity woes, I listen to a lot of trap music because it's just fun and funny for me. But instilled in that music, in that culture, coming from a place of poverty and then working my way out, you do get to a point where things don't matter anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like, absolutely. I just went and bought this cell phone because my old phone is crapping out. This was $1,200.
And now you're like, why?
Yeah. In no form or shape, did it bring me, like, this was not a value on my, I remember swiping my credit card and going, oh, well, I did that. So, you know, and this is a nice thing.
Yeah.
And this is like, a nice thing. And a couple of years ago, like, I went to go buy out my car or, you know, to sign a lease to get like the car that I wanted. It was a fast little sports car and I love it. I still drive it to this day. And I go, you know, it's still just a car. It doesn't make me any more happy or anything. Like, I can see where someone who's, maybe their dad was some type of car rebuilder type. I don't really understand. Right.
I mean, you know, we all have our different goals and our different, like, the things that drive us, you know, the things that move us forward. And, you know, for some people that is things, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. I don't know. I don't think, but, you know, for me personally, I'm in the same space where, you know, things aren't necessarily my goal. Right. Yeah. Like, everything that I have in this apartment right now, I could sell tomorrow and be fine with it.
And you wouldn't care.
Right. Because my goals are just different. My goals are different. You know, I want to help people. I want to bring positive change to the world, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's fine. You know, but it's just a matter of navigating, like you said, setting ourselves up to reach those goals.
Sure.
You know, and how do we set ourselves up to reach those goals? And it's like being willing to do the work and being willing to push and get dirty and get hurt and get, you know, whatever, and to get there, you know? And so I think, like, it's really difficult with, and I know this conversation gets had many times these days, you know, but with social media and things like that, it's really difficult to just be okay with where you're at.
Yeah.
You know, because we scroll and we see all of these things that people have or people are doing or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's all we see about their lives.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And we don't see the struggle that they've gone through to get there.
Right.
And we don't see the people who are the number of people, the percentage of people in the world who are suffering, who are struggling to simply keep their electricity on.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so we think that because we see it on social media that we should be there too.
Yeah.
Now
those same folks that have on the client side show this perspective of luxury. Also, I mean, I've dealt with coming from New York and at a very young age, being on social media, being on the internet, being like a leader in social events and music and art and fashion, in New York at a time, in whatever capacity, there is a lot of detriment and struggle behind that. And, this is just one venue for which people try to escape. For me, there's a few tenets that I always strive to achieve, or live by. And that's always, pursuit of knowledge, experience, and then comfort. Those are my things that I think would add value to my life. So,
awesome. That's cool.
This image, this constant portrayal of like, I've got the nicest things, I'm in these crazy places, also come with, like, you know, 80-hour weeks at the bar and, working a second or third job and maybe doing some online, college in some form or something, like living in my, you know, grandmother's, refurbished garage or something like that. Like, you really, the amount of experiences I've encountered where people just don't want to interface with you in their home because it's truly embarrassing.
Yeah.
I've known people that go out and just, they go, well, I'm going to go to, Jeffrey's in New York City or Barney's, and I'm going to buy this $2,500 trench coat and these crazy boots from Alexander Wang and this, that, and the other. But they live in a goddamn basement in Bed-Stuy, New York, which is like
right.
3 cubic miles of absolute projects. And
right.
So that's
so true, you know, and it's like, are you really comfortable at that point? Or are you just trying to show, show your worth, show your value by buying things
so that people can perceive. A lot of times it's I'm going to put this on so that maybe my family or friends think that I'm in a good place because I don't want them. Generally when the exposé of your life is your woes, people don't want to be around you. I think because they're already struggling with their own kind of stuff, and they don't want that
very
weight
true.
Added.
Yeah, and I think so. You know, I mean, and that's what it is, and that's what it, for me, what it comes down to is learning to be okay with where you're at right now,
mm-hmm.
while preparing for where you want to be.
Yeah,
right. And like, guys, work's not supposed to be fun. Work's not supposed to be easy.
Yeah.
You know, we're not. It's not designed that way, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, work is designed for us to get something done that contributes to the
overall
the functioning of society, not
yeah.
even the betterment of society,
sure.
but the functioning of
yeah.
our community or society
sure.
in some way or another, right? And that's okay, you know.
Yeah.
And learning to be okay with that is, I think, it's really difficult for our generation because we have so many opportunities
sure.
to make our own way, you know? And I mean, that for me, that struggle, that like just knowing I'm not doing what I want to be doing with my life,
mm-hmm.
it adds this level of stress
yeah.
to my day, to my
sure.
family, to my interactions with other people, to my sleep schedule, to all of these different things.
Yeah.
Because I'm not, like, I'm not willing to just fucking be okay with where I'm at right now.
Sure.
And knowing that that's going to get me where I want to be.
Yeah. I think as long as people work for, I mean, humans were meant to be self-sufficient, independent in nature. I think as long as, for a lot of people, as long as you're working for someone else, you're not going to be happy. But I've always said that if I'm going to have a job, I'm always going to hate my job. And if I'm going to hate my job, I better go at it for more money.
So
I'm always looking for an opportunity that's going to pay me more. And while that joy of being in a new, different environment, the grass is greener model, someone better be compensating me so that I can then create the budget for the life that I want to live in the short term.
Yeah, totally. And guys, if you guys want to have those conversations, if you have someone in your life where you want to be, and you're struggling to get there, you can always message me. You can email me at intothedarkbluepodcast@gmail.com. You can DM me at on Instagram, and we can talk about that. And I can help kind of talk you through that and figure out ways to get you where you want to be. But really what it comes down to is just knowing what you want. If you know what you want, there are ways to make it happen. And it's just, it's a matter of planning and a matter of
sacrifice.
Execution, sacrifice. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And being willing and knowing that it's not always going to be easy. It's not always going to be fun. But is it going to get you what you want?
Yeah.
You know? And I'm not talking about doing illegal shit, guys. Like,
although you could,
it's an option. Yeah. But really, I mean, yeah, it's just a matter of, being willing to sacrifice and to get where you want to be. So you guys are always welcome to have those conversations with me. I do have some experience in that realm. So just let me know. So all that said, you know, we're all trying to get somewhere. We all have goals. We all have things, places we want to be. But we also have moments in our jobs where, we don't want to be in our jobs. We just don't. And it impacts everything about us, in our personal lives. And in turn, it starts affecting our jobs, you know, when we get stressed out and frustrated about what's going on. And you know, it's that time of year right now where most jobs are really busy. You know, especially people working in production,
yeah. supply chain, like that, supply chain stuff.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah,
and just, you know, like us, like where we're at, and retail, that sort of thing, and it gets very frustrating and daunting. And so, I mean, I'm curious, how does it affect you in the now, in this moment? How does it affect your life working in something that you're not necessarily, it's not your goal, you know, it's not where you want to be forever. So how does it affect your life?
I always, I wake up and I always think I have to walk through this detriment, especially around this time of year. We're kind of bottled into this very specific schedule, which is longer than usual. We're doing, especially for our job, we're handling these odd, times of day that we're operating. Things are more stringent. There's a lot more people that we're having to manage or operate around. It's definitely, even with experience, you still stress about executing everything perfectly, especially with the type of business that we work in. And so there's always added pressure. There's an abrupt adjustment to your personal life culture. I mean, like, when I said, that one of my personal tenets is being comfortable, I mean that in every capacity.
Yeah. Right.
For me,
and coming home at 11 PM,
no,
your partner is, you know, waking up at 4 AM for work.
Yeah.
Not comfortable.
Yeah. I mean, so I'll walk you, my daily routine is, you know, before and after, this obligatory schedule change, and all these measures that we're having to deal with, is that, you know, I'll wake up right around 6 a.m. We'll have a slow start. We'll get to the gym, come back, grab some coffee, sit and talk while my partner gets ready, and she's all over the apartment. She's in the bedroom, in the walk-in. She's in the kitchen. She's cooking. She's in the bathroom doing her makeup. She's watching Wendy Williams for some reason as part of her morning routine.
Her morning cadence.
Yeah. But it is our time. Like, you know, I have a late start. She's got a kind of a longish commute. And so that's our time to connect and kind of just go over anything from the previous day as usual, you know. And then we come home roughly at the same time. She has a shorter work day than I do, but a longer travel day. I'm 10 minutes from my house, so I can just pop in and out and be
right. The commute's great.
Yeah, it's perfect. So, and then at night, you know, we can just decompress and
spend time together.
Yeah, I'm the cook, so I cook for us for X period of time, for about an hour or so every night, and then you know, she'll put the movie on, or she'll read me the whatever we got the Seattle Times, so she'll read me the paper.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, it's just we have a nice balance at home, and so it's very, albeit a little boring during the week, but it's
comfortable.
It's comfort, you know, and there's stuff around that too. You know, we like very purposefully look for things that will make us comfortable in every capacity. And so like we have twin Snuggies, like type hoodie things and like the most, fluffy pajamas and throw pillows and, blankets and stuff all over the place.
That sounds really awesome to be able to come home to that. Somebody who's willing to just like sit around with you and relax and just look ridiculous in the big fluffy, big fluffy pajamas and stuff like that. That sounds so great after a rough day, you know? But I don't know, man, I'm curious though, like, you know, the holiday season gets rough. It gets a little crazy. We're working a lot, and I'm sure a lot of you guys out there are. So what kind of things do you do to decompress, to get outside of your work brain?
Yeah. Outside of drugs, outside of participating in illegal activities. So there's one particular, kind of like, it's very simple, not exciting extracurricular we do, and we literally just kind of step outside the house and pick any direction. We dedicate about an hour to 2 hours, and then we just walk and kind of explore our neighborhood. As you know, we're relatively new to the area. Where we're situated now out in West Seattle is just like a beautiful, I mean, you've been there. You live here too. You've been there. You live there. You know. You live here too. Hands down, Alki with that higher elevation, 360 views of the city, the mountains, the beach.
Yeah. If you guys ever get the chance to come to Seattle, or if you're already in Seattle, I'm sure you already know about Alki Beach, but if you haven't been and you get the chance to visit, definitely make a point to go to Alki Beach and get yourself some fish and chips and just watch the sunset over the water. It's amazing.
It's when the clouds break, it's just spectacular, you know, views of like the Olympics, and you get the occasional seal and stuff, and it's stunning. So, so we just pick just any random direction. We start walking, we give ourselves about 2 hours, deliberate on wherever we land. We'll probably grab a drink somewhere and, just kind of disassociate. I don't know if I mentioned this before, but, in the way of trying to break up the negative culture that you bring home, and that funk or that fog that you bring home, and it starts to create and resonate this culture of perpetual negativity until you start to just find exit points, in your personal life. So you have to kind of draw that stuff away from your house. And, we just figured, you know, if we took a walk and literally cleared the air about everything that we're dealing with, in our lives, outside of each other, because there's things that we don't, there's other impacting points outside of our daily lives, or in our daily lives rather, that affect us, like our personal family paradigms.
Yeah, right. Course. So if you if you can't leave work at the door, in those cases, then all of it just kind of builds up and becomes one big
issue. There's no separate. There's no compartmentalization of very specific parts of your life. It becomes, you call your mom, let's say, and the first thing she says, obviously, mom, hey, love you, what's going on, how you been? And then the immediate, your instinct is just like, well, this is the person that I love and care for the most. I'm just going to be completely candid and transparent. Work fucking sucks.
Right. Yeah.
And then it carries in the house, whoever's in the house there. Now dad knows that shit sucks. And then maybe you're talking to your friends, your close friend group, and you get in there and y'all are trying to plan, meeting. We're all over the country at this point, some folks on the East Coast and West Coast. And now folks are leaving for like Europe and stuff like that. So we're trying to coordinate plans and trips together. And then it just becomes another conversation about, I don't know if I could leave. I don't know if this is necessarily a good time. Work sucks, shit sucks at work.
Right.
At the risk of being retaliated against for trying to taking vacation.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, that's one of the biggest things is like learning to stand up for yourself and learning to like know what is okay and what's not okay, like legally, that sort of thing, because it's so easy for us to get wrapped up in this, well, I'm not allowed to, or I'm going to get in trouble, or I'm going to, things like that. Not specifically referring to your most recent interaction, but just in general, we don't know the rules, we don't know the laws, and we're not taught those things, basically our employer is going to take any chance they can to keep us at work.
Right.
So if we don't know those laws and we don't know how to stand up for ourselves, then we're typically not going to, you know? And that I think is such an important thing, to be willing to say no, to be able to say no. And that's one of the biggest lessons I've learned working for the company we work for, honestly, over the last 5 years, is that it's okay to say no, and that setting boundaries with work is just immensely important,
Albeit you gain more courage with experience.
Absolutely.
So that's, you know, you certainly can't be a kid, coming into the workforce at a Target, you know, or Marshalls or whatever supermarket, and then off the bat just have a definitive threshold for what you can and can't do. You certainly, it's certainly a learned behavior. It's definitely political, but in our tenure, in our experience, I think we're at a point where we're very valuable.
Right.
We know our value. We know our worth in a corporate setting, in an operational setting, and so now we've built. I think it's much easier to build an immunity and have a backbone once you understand how this is going to impact. You have to obviously have to consider your business because it's your employer. So on the flip side of this, but I think in times where we can compromise, you know, and things are going to be covered and we're not going to lose any brevity at work, and we can just take, you know, in my instance, a day off because I haven't in over a
quite
year.
Some time.
Yeah. It's just, it's really unfortunate to not be, kind of backed in that capacity. I mean, you know, what's 8 hours?
Right. Right. Exactly.
What's eight hours?
Exactly. How much is it really going to change, you know, the day-to-day operation?
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact is it's not.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, guys, I mean, you know, it's all about that balance, and it's all about, you know, if you're given time off, it's okay to take that time off. Like find something to do. Even if you just stay home, take a few days off from work, just disconnect.
Yep.
And, spend that time with your loved ones outside of the stress of work. And like Laith was saying, like, leave it at the door, man. Leave work at work, if at all possible. It's an easy escape. Work can be an easy escape from other issues. It can be, it can be easy to want to promote and make the extra money. And so you work as hard as you can. You work 60 to 70 hours a week sometimes trying to get that promotion, to get that money. But what are you missing out on in the meantime, you know? So you guys take a walk.
Yeah.
You go and just disconnect from everything.
It's completely disassociative. I mean, we have such limited attention spans that the second we walk out the front door, you know, nice.
Oh, look at the bird.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm one of my hobbies outside of, or one of the things I try to keep secret, I guess, is that I'm a nut about, horticulture, and so I have some upwards of 60, you know, tropical rare species of plants all around my apartment.
Apartment is like a rainforest.
Yeah, and that's my escapism, is just caring for living things that don't talk back. It's that one thing that I can do by myself and just be completely engulfed and entertained for hours and hours and hours. Back home, I actually. And I don't know if I told you this, but I grew cannabis, in a 6x4 tent.
Oh, nice.
And, that's what got me, that's what got me started in this whole thing. And it was just 80 hours a month of like primming and growing and light change and humidity change and temperature gauging and stuff like that. And then I brought that over, outside of my 100 square foot bedroom into, our two bedroom apartment here. Outside of that, we start with the walk, and then it becomes very contemplative, but things that do not involve our stressors, because we're now in a relaxed environment. The setting for us decompressing is, in nature. So we'll just pick a path, head in any direction, and it just naturally, we're from New York City, the both of us. All we know is concrete, brick, cobblestone, asphalt.
Right, yeah.
So this is a luxury for us, and just like the family
all
of four
scenery,
raccoons. Yeah, it's just super,
yeah.
Super scenic. You can see mountains around every corner. And obviously that's captivating. You know, weather's pretty nice here most of the year.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's
So basically you're saying take some time out to separate yourself from the job, from the things. I mean, we spend 40 hours a week at this place, right?
More.
Like, yeah, right. Minimum, more, right?
Minimum, so, yeah.
So like, yeah, and you need to find some kind of separation. Yeah. And, you know, that's really important, guys. Just find something outside of work that you're interested in, something that's important to you and or your partner that you guys can do together. It really help create that bond, you know?
And then we have, you know, you got to decide a different flavor too. So it can't just be the same one thing, because then your escapism, you're replacing one addiction for another. And in our case, we have been workaholics, right? Like, we've taken a lot of time.
I haven't.
well, in my case, you know, I decidedly expended a lot of my discretionary time and all that.
I definitely spent a lot of time when I first started with the company. I spent a lot of time building a business, you know, which was fun for me.
Yeah.
I'm not the type to have an addictive personality. Yeah. That's just not me. You know, for the most part. So especially for work, like I came into this company right as I was getting a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, me and my ex were splitting up. And so it was a point in my life where it was really easy for me to set boundaries.
Sure.
You know, it was really easy for me to know what I wanted.
Right.
And so it was a very different situation, I think. You know, if I had come in still in that marriage and I had come into my management position in that marriage, then it probably would have been a very different story, because I would have been wanting to make the money to
provide for
the family and just
elevate your
know, very, very different situation. But
I think for me it might have been this is the one opportunity that's been afforded to me. It's incredibly important that you develop yourself here, considering that I don't have paper, you know, I don't have a degree. And so this is where I needed to expend most of my energy and develop myself as much as I could. And that kept me tethered to the business. But now I'm finding, you know, as I develop a relationship with my partner now, this is the person that I want to be with. This is like the perfect counterbalance for me.
Right. That's awesome.
Someone who is very supportive, very willing to compromise. She is incredibly transparent. All her needs are met. Because we're open. We're very, very open, to some extent, like to over communicate
with each other about, with each other need and,
about, you
not
know,
open,
like. closed open. but yeah, I mean, there's a level of transparency there that's unrivaled with any other partner I've ever had.
That's amazing. That's such a wonderful thing to find, man.
Yeah. You can breathe easy, you know, you don't have to tiptoe around the things and even the uncomfortable stuff or things that are said. And what's nice about that is it's only uncomfortable for about an hour or so through that discussion, rather than having something pile on and snowball. And in some cases, you know, I've observed relationships where we just don't, we don't communicate enough. And then 10 years go by, 20 years go by, you know, you observe, well, in my case, my parents, you know, just default to, that standard, like, settling,
right,
that a lot of relationships fall in.
And I think that comes along with getting into a job situation where you just kind of get stagnant in the job and just do what needs to be done to get through it. You know,
so much of it is your life work.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's like, I think
how fucked
our parents
had
that. That was like the norm, you know, that monotony was the norm, you know, to build a life for our parents' generation, you know?
Yeah.
And for us now, you know, we have the opportunity to go to different jobs, like create our value and build our value at one job and take that value to another place, you know, and show somebody else,
treasure.
Hey, I did these things and they're worth this much. And so now I want to do this for a little while, you know, and we have that opportunity, I think, so much more than our parents did now.
Sure.
You know, so yeah, I mean, it's, guys, don't feel stuck in your job. If you're at a place where you're feeling like you need change, you need something new, you can make it happen. And you know, that's another one of those things that I can talk through with you guys if you want to learn how to make that change happen. you can come message me, you can talk to me, and I will be glad to help you out and figure out what moves to make next to make that happen.
Sure. Surrender your lottery mentality and start working towards what you want.
Absolutely. Even if it is a career in a corporate setting, you know, and that's okay if that's what you want. It's just a matter of how are you going to get there. All right, man. So, speaking of work and working long hours, I've got something that's going to change your life. You ready for this?
I'm roped in.
So these sheath underwear that I've been wearing are just phenomenal, man. So like, you can wear them for the entire day without any rubbing or chafing or anything like that, because they've got a separate compartment for each of your bits.
they got pockets.
Yeah. I like to describe it as upgrading from a studio apartment to a two bedroom okay. for your junk.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So
the visualization.
But it will change your life. So if you want to try them out, you can go to sheathunderwear.com and get 25% off your first order with promo code DARKBLUE, all caps DARKBLUE. And that is sheathunderwear.com, like a sheath for your sword. Get it?
I got it.
All right. So anyway, guys, I want to thank you all for joining us. And I want to thank you, Lath, for having this conversation with
Absolutely.
Me today.
Anytime.
Yeah.
I love to talk about my woes.
Yeah, you just love to talk. but yeah, guys, so like I said, if you need anything, you need help making the next moves in your life or anything, just need to talk about life in general, you can message me on Instagram at @into_the_darkblue, or you can email me at intothedarkbluepodcast@gmail.com. We're also easy to reach on our website at www.intothedarkblue.com. It all's pretty seamless. So anyway, you guys have a great day. We'll see you soon. Cheers.